Welcome to the Go Find Out podcast. I'm Jennifer Jelliff-Russell, author, speaker, and entrepreneur, bringing you actionable ideas and interviews with awesome women to help you pursue your dreams and achieve your goals. You can find more episodes of the Go Find Out podcast by visiting gofindoutpodcast.com. Enjoy the show and go find out. Welcome back to Go Find Out, the Career Switch podcast. I'm your host, Jennifer Jelliff-Russell, and this is episode number 80. On today's show, I'm speaking with executive coach Liz Kislick on leadership topics like how to provide an inclusive work environment, what actions you might take to be a better leader, and how to approach stepping into a leadership role for the first time. But first, let's jump into a quick personal update. All right, I'll keep this short mostly because I really want to get to the interview with Liz, but also because not a lot has been going on. This weekend was Maybon, or the autumnal equinox, so I celebrated by making an apple pie. The leaves are just starting to change here in down East Maine, and we are starting to wind down our farm season. I recently got really lucky and found a local buyer for my huge surplus of tomatoes. Honestly, I have so many, so it was really nice to find somebody who was interested in buying them. Otherwise, I would have needed to take a weekend or two just to process and can them, and I was honestly really just not looking forward to that. So great that I found somebody. I've also started writing again. Unfortunately, it's not what I should be working on since I have a few other projects that are complete and that just need editing. But I'm finding that in my spare time, I really want to be working on this new fantasy. It's supposed to be a standalone. It's kind of starting to turn into a series. That's just how it seems to go for me. So I'm giving myself a little bit of leeway, and I'm digging into this standalone dark fantasy book, since it's apparently really what my muse wants to work on. I, again, can already feel the book two starting to form, so I really need to either make this a longer book or just make sure that it can work as a standalone story, just in case I never get around to book two. All right, like I said, not too much happening in our neck of the woods, so let's go ahead and dive into the interview with Liz. So today I'm speaking with management consultant and executive coach Liz Kislick. Liz specializes in developing high-performing leaders and workforces and has helped organizations like American Express, Girl Scouts, and Staples. She also has a great TEDx talk on fixing conflict at work, so I'll make sure to drop a link to that in the show notes. Welcome to the show, Liz.
Thanks so much, Jennifer. I'm happy to be with you.
Super stoked to talk to you. And as I mentioned before, for partially selfish reasons, but also I think that our listeners could definitely get a lot of great information from you about potentially stepping into leadership roles. And before we really kind of dig into, you know, the interview portion, really, first, I would love to hear what actually led you to the field of executive coaching and management consulting.
It actually came with the management consulting first and the executive coaching after. And it's because the work I did before I opened my practice was at a marketing agency where, and I'm going to put these things together, you talk about the difficulty of transitioning into leadership roles. Mm-hmm. I was managing a 300-employee call center when I was 23.
Oh my gosh, that's crazy.
Scary and crazy. Yes.
Wow.
So, exactly to your point. And the work I did there and the relationships I made while I was at that agency meant that when I left, other consultants subcontracted work to me within the first week.
Oh, wow.
So I had a good reputation in the field. So I was doing consulting work. It started out with call center management kinds of stuff and then morphed into more strategic work. But as part of those consulting relationships, in order to help companies make the change they said they wanted, you had to be able to coach leaders to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Most of us are resistant to change, often even if it's change we want. So the support of coaching is really important in helping people get off the dime, see that they can actually do things differently, and feel like they have a partner in the work. So that's how the two things came together. And it's what I've been doing ever since.
Nice. That's all so cool. And so, you know, many women in our audience, they aspire to move into leadership positions. Could you share maybe some key strategies or mindset shifts that have proven effective in helping women break through barriers and step into leadership roles?
Sure. I'm going to start with my own experience, which was one of noticing what wasn't working well and actually finding ways to improve it. Even if I wasn't truly responsible for those things. I'm not talking about stepping on people's toes or taking over anybody else's turf. But very often in organizations, there are things that everybody knows could be improved. Either people don't know what to do, or it seems too time-consuming or difficult or thankless. Sometimes just getting stuff done that nobody has gotten done before is a way of shining a light on yourself without having to brag. It's a way of showing what you can do. So that's one strategy that often works.
So doing instead of talking about what you can do.
Exactly. Because talking about what you can do, anybody can talk that way. Actually showing the difference. And particularly if colleagues or other leaders appreciate what you've done and then talk about you, or may want you to join their team instead of being on the lackluster team you happen to be on today.
Right.
All of those things are possible. Another thing that is really important is when there are opportunities, thinking, how could I get this? As opposed to, oh, I'm not ready for this.
Okay.
Even if you're not ready, think about what would it take for me to get this? What would it take for me to be ready? The research shows that men will apply for jobs if they only have a portion of the experience, have had the responsibilities, et cetera. They don't think twice about that, or maybe they do, but they apply anyway.
Yes.
Whereas women wait until they can cross every T and dot every I before they even think they could qualify. Much of the way job descriptions are written today, nobody could do the whole job. There's too much specificity, too many requirements. There's the assumption that a single job can fix too many problems. So if the case anyway, why not figure out if you could even have a shot? So
yes.
What would it take for you to do it? And could you promise that you would work on those things? Right? You could make a case for, I have not yet done these three things. You can be honest about it.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm studying for the such and such certification. I'm willing to go out in the field and do these things and put in extra time. You can make an offer that shows what you are willing to do to step up. You may not get it, and that could be fine, but you'll have shown that you are willing to go the extra mile and that you're interested in moving up, and then people are more likely to think of you the next time an opportunity comes around. You may also learn more about what it really takes. And in that way, sometimes you can find for yourself a mentor or a sponsor, somebody who wants to help lead you through the organization more than perhaps your current boss wants to do.
A lot of really great advice in there. I feel like you have to pause and go back and kind of listen through that a little bit piece by piece. But that's such a good point. And you're so right. I, you know, worked for 10 years in the career coaching services, and I worked with both men and women. And you're so right that men will absolutely apply for jobs where they only meet, you know, 10% of the job description. And women feel like they have to tick every single box in order just to apply. So absolutely. I love that idea of thinking about, could you do it? And then showing that employer by, you know, starting to take steps towards those responsibilities or types of experience that they're looking for. What a great piece of advice. I love that. Nice. I'm definitely going to steal that. So I also would love to know, What would you say are some actionable steps that professionals can take to consistently enhance their leadership skills?
Two things. One is keep learning, and the other is keep practicing. So the learning part is don't assume you have the end all of the knowledge that you need. Whether it's coursework, reading things, YouTube videos, webinars, there are so many resources available for deepening your skills in the things you already know something about.
Mm-hmm.
That's also true, though, for things that you might just be interested in. Or if you're really targeting growth in your organization, think about the adjacent spaces where you have not yet worked. But how could you get more learning or understanding about those? For example, even just shadowing a colleague from time to time may tell you more about their job and how their role and responsibilities interact with yours in a way that might change the way you do your own job to support both of you. So that's one approach. That's just the learning, being curious. The second thing, though, is practicing. Mm. That's where you take on more risk, because practice is an acknowledgement of imperfection. It is looking to be better.
Yeah, that's hard.
Right? And therefore, it means that sometimes you may, volunteer to do a presentation when you haven't done that kind of presentation or to a certain group before. You might volunteer to go on a customer visit when you haven't done that before and you're nervous about it because it's a big responsibility.
Mm-hmm.
But these are the kinds of things that expand your skill set and help you think about your own job in better ways. And they also give you more insight into what other opportunities there are that you might not otherwise have considered.
Okay. So now you have worked with a wide range of organizations, including Fortune 500 companies. What are some common leadership traits that you've observed in successful women leaders that our audience can learn from?
The themes are similar. Curiosity, openness, willingness to learn, willingness to put in the time. I just wrote a note to one of my clients. She's a C-level executive. And I told her that part of what I appreciate is her willingness to dig deep, to do research, to not give the easy answer, to keep moving forward. Those kinds of things. Those are really great. Another thing I want to raise is the idea of being decisive. That once you know what's going on, make the decision if it's your decision to make.
That's my struggle right there.
It's hard, but it's a significant thing. We all hate those leaders who waffle, or are those people that we say, oh, they changed their mind based on whoever spoke to them last.
Yes.
That's a bad rep.
Yeah.
Being able to find the balance between being decisive versus being too urgent, deciding too many things or deciding them unilaterally, that's no good. But knowing when it's time to take the shot, that's unbelievably important.
Mm. That's such a huge thing. I almost feel like it's difficult, right, to be decisive and to be willing to make that decision and then stand behind it and then tell somebody else who wants it a different way, no. I think that's definitely a struggle. I think a lot of women go through that two-letter word, no, right? Or just saying, no, we've decided to do it this way. Yeah, so that's definitely something I struggle with. And I almost feel like if I turned it around and said, well, would I want to follow somebody who was indecisive, right? Like you said, it's difficult. It's hard to follow somebody who waffles. So that's a really good point. Yeah.
It's interesting, Jennifer, because what you expressed as the concern was not about the decision itself, but conveying it to someone who might not be happy with it.
Yeah.
So that makes me think of another characteristic that is so important and so valuable. And that's clarity, being able to express your view and the reason for it with clearness. If you take a tough decision, like we're talking about, and you actually think through or write down, here's why this is important. Here is the backup for it. And then you just explain that. You don't have to have quite as many, I'm going to call it feelings about that. You know this person may be disappointed. You can be sorry for that. But you can also know that it is the right decision for the organization. Yeah. And so now, disappointed person, let's figure out how we move forward together, given that I understand that you would have preferred a different outcome.
Yeah. Well, I love that. For those who are actually transitioning from individual contributors to leadership roles, what are some potential pitfalls to kind of maybe watch out for?
One of the biggest ones, if you've been an individual contributor, is thinking that the people you're now responsible for are like you. Of course, as humans, we are all like each other. But as people in particular roles, we can bring very different things, whether those are skills, temperaments, feelings, all kinds of things. We bring very different things. It is a huge mistake to assume that others will react the way you do, that they will perceive what you perceive, understand what you understand, and agree. So just like we said before about clarity, you have to prepare for the idea that they will not read your mind. They will not understand your motivation. And so it just makes sense to explain right out. That's one absolutely crucial thing. The other is to recognize, once you become a leader, that your work actually requires working through other people. Your work is not doing the task. It's assigning it properly, training it, supervising it, measuring it, those kinds of things. I'm being very reductive in this, of course, but
No, but that makes sense. Yeah.
That's the gist. And if you are not comfortable giving up control over the task itself, you will have a hard time.
Yes.
You will turn yourself into a micromanager, and everybody hates those.
That's correct. Yes. I've been there in the employee role, right, with the micromanager. So you're totally correct there. Yeah. Can you share some practical ways for women leaders to foster a more inclusive and supportive work environment?
So it's so interesting that part of being inclusive is actually recognizing that everybody isn't like you, just as we were saying before. And welcoming them the way they are, that's a good thing.
Yeah.
That you can learn from them and expand your own horizons. The idea of being welcoming to help people, therefore, feel a sense of belonging in the same way that, you know, if you were hosting a dinner party, you would want people to feel comfortable in your home. And I would hope that you would check, for example, to see if anybody had food allergies, because you want them to feel comfortable. They may not have to eat every single thing you prepare, but that you make sure that there is enough, that they don't feel neglected or left out, overlooked, any of those things. Thinking about leadership as a form of hosting, that can be a really useful metaphor.
Yeah.
So that's one way to look at it. The other thing, though, is to explicitly ask people what they want to get from a situation, what their expectations are, how you can support them in their goals. It's by being curious and learning enough about them as individuals that you can really recognize all the different kinds of people you have. This is particularly important in today's remote and hybrid environments, because unless you seek out the information, you may never learn what your team member is like. And so you don't know how to behave in ways that naturally include them. In other words, although this will sound weird, don't trust your instincts 100%. Ask questions.
Yeah, no, that's really great advice. I think there's so much fear around asking the wrong question or asking the question in a way that might make somebody feel uncomfortable. I think that people then don't ask those questions.
May I give you a technique?
Of course. Yes, please.
Don't ask people why.
Okay.
Don't ask people why they do something. Why did you do that? it immediately implies a kind of judgment that is not a quantitative judgment. It has a kind of moralistic or value-driven sense in there.
Yeah, it does.
It can make people uncomfortable. But if you say something instead like, would you tell me about your decision to do this? Would you tell me how you came to this point? Something that just says, talk to me, I'm listening. Why feels more narrow and feels, certainly can feel, like someone's already unhappy with you.
Oh, that's true. Yes, it definitely puts you on the defensive.
Right. And tone is important too. Actually, calm yourself and ground yourself. If you're nervous about a conversation, your tone is likely to be worse than if you say to yourself, I really want to engage with this person. I know there are things I don't understand. So it's my goal to be calm and receptive in this conversation.
Nice.
A great thing to think about is, depending on the age and role that you are in and what you've experienced in life, whether you have a kid, whether you have a younger sibling, cousin, neighborhood, friend, whatever, how would you engage someone? I'm not talking about talking down. I'm talking about the kind of openness that we often have to children that we do not have for adults.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a really great way to approach it, definitely. Yeah. Now, I subscribed actually to your newsletter list, and I got access to your free field guide, which is super awesome. It's called How to Resolve Interpersonal Conflicts in the Workplace, Successful Approaches to Conflict that Strengthens Your Business. And I think it's probably safe to say that based on that book and your TEDx talk, that you have explored conflict resolution pretty extensively. So what would you say are the best methods for women leaders to effectively manage conflicts within their teams?
The first thing is not to worry about the fact that you hate conflict yourself.
Gotcha.
I hate conflict myself.
Right.
I still get physically uncomfortable. The thing is that we don't call it a conflict unless we think it's a problem.
Okay.
If it's just a difference of opinion and we're not worried about it, we don't label it. We just work with it. So knowing that you're uncomfortable, the first thing is really to ground yourself physically, to be calm, to give yourself grace, and to know that almost anything that happens, unless you're dead or you have to fire the other person, you can always go back and repair, try it again, take another route in. Very few of these things are completely irredeemable. Okay. They're just not. People appreciate it if you go back, if you got something wrong. So that's the first thing. You set yourself up that you can handle it.
Okay.
Again, I'm going back to the same themes, being clear about what needs to be accomplished and sharing those goals. That's really valuable. Expressing to the people who are in conflict or to your team the goals and the values that we have as a team. We're having this discussion because we want to improve the way we serve our customers. If everybody agrees with that goal and the value of serving customers, then whatever anybody else says, you can draw that back and say, well, let's look at how that serves customers. Are there better ways to do that? Anything that takes you back to the goals and the values is easier to talk about than, well, I don't like that way, or that didn't work for me last time, or any of those things that shut a person down, make them feel resentful, and then they want to argue with you.
Yeah, it's hard to argue with the point that everybody's agreed upon. How can we make this better for the customer, right? Yeah, I love that. Nice. Something that I have talked about actually on this show before is the ever dreaded imposter syndrome, right? And I feel like even executive level women that I've spoken to do deal with this as well. So do you have any suggestions for overcoming that self-doubt when stepping into a leadership role?
So I really like the construction of self-doubt much better than imposter syndrome.
Okay.
Because to me, imposter syndrome says, I am afraid I don't belong here. Self-doubt says, I'm not sure I know what to do or say. Well, that's perfectly reasonable. Why should you have to know what to do or say all the time? We're all human. We only have experience as far as we have it. If you characterize yourself as not belonging, you are not giving yourself a chance to succeed in the situation. You're writing yourself off. It's not a good stance. It adds to fear, and it actually, you know, it makes you separate yourself in a way. Those people over there are different from me. I'm not them. Mm-hmm. This is a time when strengthening the idea of difference is not so great, right? We're all here to serve the customer or do what's best for our employees or be more innovative in this product solution, whatever it is. That's the first thing. Second thing, self-doubt can be handled with some of the techniques we've talked about before. Learn more, practice more. Mm. Find ways to experiment with small things that feel lower risk, perhaps. Rehearse, for example. It doesn't have to be with a colleague. It doesn't have to be with your significant other over and over, who may become impatient if you keep bringing the same problem back home.
Right.
but there are almost always colleagues either inside your organization or in similar roles to yours. If you belong to trade associations, professional groups, those kinds of things. Talk with all of them. How have you handled this? What do you do when you're in this situation? You know that executive better than I do. Do they prefer that you come see them in their office, that you call them, or you write them a two-page memo? Get information about the thing you're worried about.
Nice. Okay. I like that. So considering the challenges that may arise from work-life balance, what strategies have you seen women leaders use to maintain their own well-being while successfully leading their teams?
I think I have less good answers to this.
Okay. No stress.
This is just hard. It's hard for men. It's hard for women, often harder for women, because women pick up more of the scut work, the non-glamorous stuff, both on the job and at home. That's not true of everyone, but it is generally true. The other thing is, overall, this is a gross generalization. I am calling it out as such. Women are raised to be more self-questioning than men are, which is why men apply for anything and women are afraid to unless they're perfect.
Right.
So the ability to find balance is very hard for almost everyone. And women often feel extremely guilty that they are neglecting one thing or another.
So true. Yeah.
If I were going to encourage a couple of things, I would say the first thing is actually to prioritize your physical health. Because if you don't sleep, if you don't eat decently, not perfectly, but decently, if you don't get a certain amount of movement, you don't have the strength and energy to tackle the rest. And next is mental health. And that's not just stress. People are more anxious than they used to be. The world is very scary. We learned that going through the pandemic. Making sure, whether it is time alone, time in nature, watching a funny movie, humor is fantastic. Not sarcastic humor, by the way. That is not restful or refreshing. But, you know, funny, laughing hard kind of humor.
Okay.
All those things are restorative. That's very important. Having a couple of truly good companions at work or not at work, intimate partners, even fairly casual friends, but that you share certain critical things with. It is important to have people to talk to. Keeping difficulties only to yourself, that can sap your strength. And then the other thing is actually really managing your calendar well.
Yes. Oh my gosh. Yes. When you see things start to pile up in the calendar, yeah, that anxiety goes up. Absolutely. Yeah. Now, do you feel like there are any major myths about women stepping into leadership roles that you frequently have to dispel?
Okay. I'm going to give you a big one.
Uh-oh. Okay.
Women leaders are sometimes thought of as being mean or manipulative or hard to work with.
Really? Huh. Okay.
Oh, yes. And this often happens because there's an expectation that women leaders will be warm and loving, care about you more than men will. What an unfair stereotype is that?
Right?
As if either the men didn't care or the women would naturally care more.
Right.
Whatever that happens to mean. It is surprising to me how many people I've heard say that they prefer not to have a woman boss.
Really?
Yes.
Huh.
Sometimes it's because they think the woman boss won't have clout.
Okay.
And therefore won't be able to move them forward. But sometimes it's for these other reasons. All of those reasons are false. Of course, there are manipulative women.
Sure.
And mean women. The problem is we notice them more than equally yucky men.
Right.
Because our expectations are different. It can be very helpful to say, if this person were a standard issue, old Hollywood leader with this behavior. Because our expectations are built on old models of male, white, cisgendered people in positions of power. So when we see those people in positions of power, we're often more accepting of their behavior, even if their behavior is bad.
It's so true. Yeah.
Whereas if we see women with some of the behavior of those characters, we think the woman is bad, even if her behavior might be regular business behavior and she just needs more finesse, more skillfulness, more practice.
That's so on point, definitely. Yeah. What final advice would you give to a woman who is weighing the opportunity to step into a leadership role?
There is, I think it's a Zen saying, leap and the net will appear. Sometimes you have to go for it. It's helpful if you know you have skills. It's helpful if you have already dedicated yourself to a certain amount of learning and practice. But if there is a good opportunity ahead of you and you're scared, the thing to do is to marshal your resources to support you so you can afford to try it.
Okay.
Have people ready whose shoulders you can cry on when you mess something up. It will happen. But experienced people mess things up too.
That's true.
It's not just you because you're new. There are all kinds of books and articles about the first 90 days or the first 100 days. Take an opportunity and make a plan.
Okay.
Make a plan for how you're going to address it. Have your supporters who will give you guidance, if possible, both inside and outside of the organization. If you sell yourself short, then you can start feeling stuck. Now, if you truly love your life as an individual contributor and you actually know that you are mostly annoyed by other human beings,
yes.
Don't take the opportunity just because it looks like status or even a bump in pay.
Yeah.
Because leadership is about other human beings. And so if you don't have the intestinal fortitude to deal with that, you are asking for a hard time. But if you think you can try or that you're willing, and that you're willing to learn how to deal with all us difficult humans, absolutely give it a shot. The worst thing that happens is it goes wrong and you have to figure out what's next.
Yeah. Okay. Very good advice. Yeah. And so where can we learn more about you and your consulting services?
Oh, thank you. So my website is the most obvious place, and that's lizkislick.com, LizKislik. And as you were saying before, Jennifer, I've got years and years of articles and blogs. There's a tremendous amount of content about all aspects of organizational life and leadership and teamwork and my TEDx and all kinds of stuff like that. You can sign up for newsletters, lots of stuff. And of course, LinkedIn.
Okay, yeah. Perfect. Yeah, I will definitely make sure to drop the links to your website and a direct link to your newsletter sign up, because I already have benefited from that. So that's been great for me. Also a link to your LinkedIn profile. Perfect. Well, thank you so much for coming on the show today. I feel like, absolutely selfishly, this has been really great for me. Really great advice. I'm not thinking about stepping up into a leadership role right now, but even in my current, individual contributor role, I feel like a lot of what you said today will be really helpful for me. So thank you again.
You asked really good questions and I enjoyed the conversation.
Well, thanks. Y'all, this was such an amazing interview with Liz. Even though I'm not in a leadership position, I do occasionally lead meetings or even just lead conversations at work, and she really hit on a lot of things that I have noticed that I struggle with. I honestly felt like I needed to pause and take notes during the interview, especially when we discussed things like imposter syndrome. I really liked how she recommended tackling that by taking a different perspective on it. I also really appreciated her advice about being a more decisive leader. I've since found myself pausing to take stock and make sure that I have definite reasons to back up my decisions before going into a meeting where I have to explain things like my thought process behind a design decision. It really does give me more confidence in that decision, and I'm less likely to just want to people please, which is definitely one of my downfalls. Her advice on that definitely resonated with me. And hopefully something in this interview also resonated with you, since we talked about so many different aspects of leadership at different levels, whether you are currently a leader or stepping into a leadership role. All right, that's it for today. Join me next time in a solo show about things that you might expect after making the career switch. Until then, go find out. Thanks for listening to the show. I hope the information helps you tackle your career switch goals. You can find more episodes at gofindoutpodcast.com or subscribe and rate us on your favorite listening service. That's all for today. Now go find out.